Hello and welcome to iVow. I'm Jenny Prisk and your host for this podcast conversation. And today we are delighted to welcome to iVow Sue Diaz. She is a peace writer with the Women Peacemakers at the Institute for Peace and Justice at the University of San Diego. And also she is an author, an educator, and a freelance journalist whose work has appeared in a variety of regional and national publications that include Newsweek, the Los Angeles Times, and Reader's Digest. She wrote an award-winning series for the Christian Science Monitor about the war in Iraq, and those stories were the starting point of her most recent book, Minefields of the Heart, A Mother's Stories of a Son at War. In 2013, Sue Diaz worked with Rehana Hashmi of Pakistan and wrote the narrative Standing with Our Sisters. And in 2014, she worked with Nirmalka Fernando of Sri Lanka and wrote Busybody for Peace. And now we welcome her to the conversation as the writer for the woman peacemaker Hamsatu Alamin of Nigeria. Sue, welcome to our conversation.
Oh, thank you, Jenny. Glad to be here.
And it's lovely to have you here. You have quite an experience with the women peacemakers who annually come to the Joan B. Kroc Institute for Peace. How did you first become a peace writer? How did all that start?
It came about sort of indirectly in a way. I have a colleague who does some work with the Institute, was doing some videotaping, and she told me about the program, and it sort of caught my attention at the time because it was shortly after I had been writing a lot about war, actually, the series that I did for the Monitor. Not only writing about war, but I had been leading writing workshops for war veterans, and so hearing many war stories, and just the thought of perhaps writing in the service of peace and working with peacemakers, it intrigued me, and I just gravitated toward it. I mean, it was something that I really wanted to do.
And as you just explained, a wonderful juxtaposition of war and peace, as it were. And yet, having been paired with a woman from Nigeria, I know things are not necessarily straightforward and easy in Nigeria. But when you first meet, tell us about the nature of you as the peace writer and Hamsatu as the peacemaker. How does that relationship get started and how does it develop?
Well, it's really an extraordinary relationship, and in all, you know, the two previous times that I've done it, and this time as well, it's a unique relationship. There's really nothing else like it. What we do is we're paired with a peacemaker as peace writers,
yes.
And we sit down every morning for a couple hours and interview our peacemaker. And we usually start with something from their childhood, their early work. And we're always looking to understand what made them who they are, what motivated them to do the work that they do. And so for 2 hours every morning, Monday through Friday, you sit with another human being and you say, tell me about yourself. And you listen. And it's something that I think most of us in our day-to-day lives, we rarely get listened to or listen in that way. I mean, it really turns out to be an exercise in being totally and completely present to another human being. We ask questions. I mean, I usually go into an interview with maybe one or two questions, but then that answer will lead to something else. And some peacemakers are natural storytellers.
Yes.
You ask them one question and they just run with it. Other ones you have to draw out a bit, but you get to know someone in a way that perhaps they have never been known, and maybe even you have never known someone that deeply. It's a relationship that I think is both personal and intimately personal, but also professional. I always think like we're not really here to make a new best friend. That's not the point. That often happens. And more than a friend, you almost feel like you're a sister with the person that you interview. But we're here to do a job, too. And so there's sometimes a delicate balance. I know much more about Hamsatu than she will ever know about me.
Mm-hmm.
But she still knows me as a person. And the point isn't to make a new best friend, but to hear this person out, then take what they tell you and turn it into their life story.
That's quite a challenge. I mean, for those of us who are not writers, that is quite a challenge. There must be some very emotional moments and some very deep moments as you ask these questions. Have there been any significant ones for you with Hamsatu or perhaps even with Rehana or Nimalka?
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's often the case. And sometimes the stories that are most difficult to tell are the ones that most need to be told.
Yes.
Hamsatu lives in Nigeria, in the mm-hmm. northern section of Nigeria, which has more than its share of difficulties and troubles. She lives in the city of Maiduguri, which is where the extremist group Boko Haram originally began and for a while had their headquarters there. And many of the boys in Boko Haram are people from the neighborhood that Hamsatu grew up in. She will say that if anyone in Maiduguri tells you they don't know someone in Boko Haram, they're lying. She says, everyone knows the boys, and it's part of a community.
Mm-hmm.
And her tribe is the Kanuri tribe, which is also very much associated with Boko Haram. There was an instance where the situation there is so complicated and complex.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the enemy and who isn't, and who do you trust and who do you not trust? And there was a story that she told me where her son, coming home from school when the soldiers had sort of put the city on lockdown, but they were just simply trying to get home from school. The soldiers said, stop, but they knew that if they did, they would probably be arrested mm-hmm. and perhaps never seen again, which mm-hmm. was something that would happen. He ended up being arrested. The friend next to him was shot. Stories like that sometimes they're very difficult to tell, but they need to be told.
Mm-hmm.
So
this must change your life, learning about women and their work and countries and politics in a way that none of us really ever learn. I mean, you're plunging deeply into these stories. How does that change you?
It opens your eyes quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think as Americans a lot, we have sort of a tunnel vision in some ways. We know about our country, we know what affects us, but what happens in other countries, especially third world countries,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't even make the news. I mean, if you want to read those stories, you have to go to page 6 in the newspaper and then maybe a little paragraph mm-hmm. for something that's a big deal in another country. So it has really opened my eyes. And in some ways, it's also, I think, not to sound cheesy, but opened my heart.
I'm sure.
Yeah. When I knew that Hamsatu would be my peacemaker,
mm-hmm.
I did a little bit of research. I learned that she had this connection with Boko Haram.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she actually knows the boys. She's been a negotiator. She can bridge the gap between the government and the boys, the terrorists,
mm-hmm.
and they trust her,
mm-hmm.
and she knows them.
Mm-hmm.
Before I started working with Hamsatu, I thought, how in the world does someone become a terrorist like the terrorists of Boko Haram? How can any human being possibly do the things that they do
mm-hmm.
and act in the way that they act? And it just seemed inconceivable to me. I could not, as they say, wrap your head around it. But after talking to Hamsatu, she has a great heart.
Yes.
And she is able actually to stand in the shoes of just about everybody that she deals with, including the boys of Boko Haram.
Goodness, that's a talent.
Yeah. I mean, I have been able to sort of see the humanity in them through her.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's been kind of a wake-up call in a way to me.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. And would be so beneficial and helpful for so many of us to see that side, because we tend to just take, as you mentioned, that harsh view because that's how they are written about. And speaking of writing and the fact that you are writing Hamsatu Alamin's story, what we would love you to share is a small part of that narrative.
Okay, the piece that I would like to read, Jenny, is a story of when Hamsatu had the opportunity, or was actually charged with, going to look for the girls of Chibok, the schoolgirls that were kidnapped by Boko Haram.
Mm-hmm.
It was a story that was in the news quite a bit when it happened. There were 200 girls from this school that were abducted and disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And so Hamsatu, because of her connections with the government, with civil service, with Boko Haram, with the community. She is sort of a natural person that was looked to go on this mission.
Mm.
So I would like to read that story.
Good.
They were the pride and the hope of their families and the small town of Chibok. Teenage schoolgirls who diligently did their homework, studied for tests, and looked forward to career someday, maybe in medicine or law or teaching or who knows. Bright girls confident that the books they opened could also open doors, doors that had been closed to so many of their mothers and grandmothers. Schools in Borno State had been shut down for several weeks under the threat of terror attacks, but the government boarding school just outside Chibok had reopened so the girls could take their finals. When the exam scheduled for the next day, the girls were asleep in their dormitory when gun-toting members of the extremist group, Boko Haram, posing as Nigerian soldiers, kicked open the doors and herded more than 200 of them into the waiting buses, trucks, and vans. "We're here to protect you from Boko Haram," the men lied. "Hurry, get in." Hmm. And the girls, startled and scared, believed them. The vehicles drove off into the night, but a couple of the girls grew suspicious, jumped off, hid for a while in the bush, and then ran to the town, their hearts, no doubt, pounding as fast as their feet on the dry Saharan sand. In the weeks that followed the kidnapping, "Bring back our girls" became the cry, not only of the families of the abducted, but also of people throughout Nigeria and the world. But still, no rescue. So when Hamsatu was asked to accompany the internationally regarded Australian negotiator, Stephen Davis, on a rescue mission that was in the works, she didn't hesitate. Hamsatu soon found herself sitting at a hotel in her city having breakfast with Stephen Davis, a military officer, and the woman known as Mama Boko Haram. They were waiting for the rescue go-ahead. Davis reiterated that Boko Haram was prepared to release some of the girls as a goodwill gesture toward a peace deal with the government. While they continued talking over eggs, biscuits, and tea, the military officer's cell phone beeped the arrival of a text. "This is it," he said, looking up from the screen and then passing the phone to Davis. Hamsatu leaned in to get a look. The mission was on. "Let's go," Davis said. They hopped into a jeep and swung by the nearby teaching hospital to pick up several doctors and nurses who would be traveling with them in their own van to bring back the girls they all hoped to find. After several hours on the road, the small convoy got off it, bumping through the fine sand and cracked clay of the open desert in the area around Numarte, near the northern border of Niger. After a stop at a military barracks, soldiers led them to the divisional office of the local police, where an officer said he'd take them to a farmhouse where they'd find what they came for. Looking out the van's window as they approached the farmhouse, Hamsatu saw row after row of gum arabic trees and heard the police officer say, "This is the place." The place where they'd find the schoolgirls Boko Haram kidnapped from Chibok? It looked like it could be. Long swaths of fabric, the kind African women wrap around their waists as skirts or pull around their shoulders in the cold or use to protect their eyes in a sandstorm, hung outside the narrow windows of the farmhouse. Noticing that those wrappers looked fresh, free of the layer of dust that quickly settles over everything there, Hamsatu thought, "Good, the girls must be inside." But in spite of the evidence of young women on the premises, the place the convoy had been led to was now deserted. With the sun starting to set, the disappointed group headed back to the crowded barracks to spend the night. On a shabby mattress, no thicker than a book, Hamsatu was drifting off to sleep when a panicked shout brought her back. "Everybody take cover, stay down. Boko Haram is out there, on the move." Those who were still up hit the floor, but Hamsatu's curiosity got the better of her. She made her way to a window, peeked out, and saw in the distance headlights sweeping across the flat, treeless landscape. Among the vans and trucks, she could make out the outline of a bus. Given the events of the day, she was sure some of the Chibok girls must be sitting on the seats inside. She imagined them reaching for the hand of the classmate they were next to as they vanished once again into the night.
Oh my goodness, Sue, that is vivid, and I've got goosebumps. It's very, very chilling. You write in the most beautiful form of imagery that just brings the whole scene to life. Has that always been your style, or is that what this particular story provoked in you?
Well, actually, what I love about this program is we are sort of given the opportunity to write the life stories not really as an extended Wikipedia version of their lives, mm-hmm. but as creative nonfiction. Mm. And so for a writer, that's just a wonderful challenge. I mean, what we want to do is enable readers to see what the peacemaker saw, hear what the peacemaker heard, feel what the peacemaker felt, and so the reader can become sort of part of that experience and learn something from that as well.
Well, I'm absolutely certain that our listeners will most certainly feel that they have intimately shared that experience because of the just the intelligence and the creativity of your writing. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for in the conversation. However, I think that seems a very appropriate place to conclude. But I just wondered if you had any final thoughts for anybody listening who might want to become a peace writer, tell them where they can find the narratives, anything that you'd like to share as we close.
Anyone who's thinking about being a peace writer, it's an extraordinary experience. It's a wonderful experience. It's a lot of work as well. And if you're interested, just Google this, USD Women Peacemakers Program Narratives, or even just Women Peacemakers Program USD, and it'll take you to the website, and you can find more information there. It's an experience I would recommend. I wouldn't have done it 3 times if I didn't. So thank you, Jenny.
Well, it's been such a pleasure, Sue. Thank you for sharing a small part of the life of Hamsatu Al-Amin, and we are very fortunate that you are providing that documentation and that her story and your writing will live alongside each other for a very, very long time. Thank you for joining us today, Sue.
Thank you, Jenny.